Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We're on Twitter if you can't get through or don't want to make a call. At Grant H. Paulson and at Funny Danny is how you can hit us up online. Today's poll on Twitter right now at Grant H. Paulson. Go vote. Cruising towards 700 votes right now. We're asking you, of the four highest grossing actors of 2019, which do you like the most? The Rock, Samuel L. Jackson, Chris Hemsworth, or Chris Pratt? And as we go to the Mattress Warehouse hotline to welcome our buddy Albert Breer of MMQB and SI onto the show, why don't we start with him right there? Breer, you got to watch a movie with The Rock, Sam Jackson, Hemsworth, or Pratt. Who are you choosing?
Sam Jackson, I think.
I don't think you can go wrong with that.
Yeah, there's no wrong answer on that list.
You put me on the spot there, but yeah, I'll go with Sam Jackson.
So, to the business of football, my friend, give us the state of the union here with the GMs, I guess, pushing back and Roger Goodell and company saying, no, we're going to go ahead as planned. For the record, I think it's smart because there's no content and you've got a captive audience. Not to make light of anything, but I get why the league would want to kind of go ahead with business as usual.
Well, I mean, I'll take this back to the whole pro day thing, which, it was a short period of time where the league kind of kept things rolling, but there were people on the team side screaming during that whole thing too, and the reason why is because different people are facing different circumstances in different parts of the country, and so during the pro day thing, it was every team had to make a decision based on the health of their people, but also there was a competitive element to it. And so a lot of teams thought that was unfair, that they were having to make decisions on the health of their people, knowing that, there might be five or six teams that make the trip to the University of Oregon for the pro day. And then finally, after I think it was about 36 hours, the league said, okay, we're pulling the plug in the pro day circuit altogether. That allowed teams to make decisions based solely on the health of their people. And I think that's the same thing here. It's just, because it's such a competitive league, there are different teams that are going to handle this in different ways. And, I think it even goes back to free agency. Now, I talked to one team where literally, guys, the GM was running free agency from the dining room table in his house, right? And then I was talking to another team where everyone was in the office. Is that fair? Is the team that's taking precautions with its people at a disadvantage now because it's prioritizing the health of its people versus the team that's got everybody in the office? I mean, that's the thing, is there's so many complications to this on the team level. I just think it makes it really hard to put these teams in position where it's like, okay, we're going to make you make multi-million dollar decisions that could wind up, basically determining your job security in a year or two. And we're going to make you structure those decisions and sort of the makeup of those decisions, under this national emergency. And so that's what's hard about it, guys. I mean, from a business standpoint, there's no question. The NFL draft would do awesome ratings-wise under the current circumstances. People will be dying for sports content when we get to the end of April. and the NFL giving it to him, I'm sure, like, for a lot of people out there, it'd be a welcome relief having that, right?
Just like free agency, you know, was.
Yeah, but like free agency was, but it was like, I know there were a lot of teams that were really, really pissed that free agency went on the way it did. And it was because, again, it's, you know, you're forcing people to make decisions based on what their competition is doing and not the health of the people in their buildings. And so it's hard, it's complicated. And I know there are lots of NFL teams that feel like the league should do what everyone else is doing, which is press pause on what business is going on right now. And, you know, I just, that part of it's really, really hard, guys. And, you know, again, I'm not talking about the general public here. I'm talking about the people in the buildings. And I think you guys know this, like, coaches and scouts feel like they're constantly being thrown under the bus by the owners, you know? So this is sort of something where they've got their defenses up, and I can see why.
And I get all that. And Albert Breer is with us on Grant and Danny. I guess this is a way lesser important issue, but it is something I'm fascinated by. Let's say the draft happens in a month. Yep. What does it look like? I mean, is it just teams kind of announcing the picks from their war room? Or are they actually going to be at podiums? Like, how would that work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would, you know, the concept is they do it in a studio. And they certainly have studio space, you know, like you could do it if you do it in L.A. where NFL Network is. You know, you could do it. You could arrange it at NFL Films. They've got a great facility in New Jersey. And so they're trying to do something innovative. You know, I'm sure if it's allowable at the time, if team facilities are back open again, and we'll see whether they are or not. I don't think anybody can predict that. You know, they would have the war room cams and all of that. So, I mean, look, like, you know, did the streets in Nashville last year add something to the broadcast? Sure, it did. You know, like all of that, like players being there, and, you know, you get to see the players at their tables and, you know, go up and shake the commissioner's hand. All that's part of how we viewed the draft. You know, but I still think for anybody who's a football fan, there's, you know, a real, you know, kind of like the essence of it is, you know, the unpredictability of it, you know, the twists and turns of the night. And none of that has anything to do with the crowd or any of the human element. It's just, you know, what happens. And so I think that there'd be an innovative way to do it where they'd be able to sort of create a fun, different experience that I think we'd all know at the time. It's just sort of a one-off thing.
The MMQB's Albert Breer with us here on Grant and Danny. Albert, let's shift here to the Redskins, really a league thing here with Trent Williams. It seems like the temper tantrum that his agent threw yesterday, it doesn't jive with what's going on. The Redskins are trying to get decent value for a player. They should have done this a year ago, so that's their fault. This latest part, though, seems to me to be the Trent Williams camp fault, wanting a huge amount of money with a lot of uncertainty and maybe some medical issues there. It sounds like there's not a lot of realism coming from the Trent Williams side.
And that's sort of the issue. You know, is the reality of it, like, the reality of the situation is it's hard to find teams that are willing, unless you're talking about, like, a top of the league player, which Trent has been at times, who's still young, who you can build around. It's very difficult to find teams that are willing to give up both top draft capital and a top contract for a guy. It's happened a couple times. Like, even like, look at Dee Ford last year, right? Now that was a second round pick that was involved in that trade for a guy who had, you know, double digit sacks the year before. And the reason, you know, the Chiefs could only get a second-round pick for him is because, you know, the Niners also had to do a contract with him. Frank Clark was a little different, where they did give up a one and a two and a contract. But those sorts of things are really, really rare. And so, you know, if Trent Williams' priority is getting out of D.C., you know, then he has to be flexible, you know, on the contract end of it. And that part of it is what scares teams off. Same sort of thing was at play in the DeAndre Hopkins deal, why the Texans weren't able to get value. And I can certainly understand Ron Rivera and Kyle Smith and all the guys that are running the Redskins right now looking at it saying, look, dude, we're happy to, you know, explore trades, but we're not going to give you away. And if you want to go somewhere else, that's fine, but you have to work with us here and you have to do a reasonable contract with somebody else. And I'm just telling you guys, he wants to be the highest paid tackle in football. And I think he's probably come off of this a little bit, but I know one of the issues with the Redskins was last year, before things really went off the rails, he was asking for quarterback money. And that is just, I mean, I look like if the player in this situation, if Trent Williams in this situation is being realistic about it, and he really wants to get out of D.C., there's a path to doing it. You know, but the financial ask on his end is just, I think, way beyond where the Redskins would be able to move him for any sort of return where they would feel good about saying, okay, like, we'll go ahead and do this.
Albert, how can a guy like Trent, with his injury history, let alone the cancer that he had removed from his head, or a guy like Cam Newton, for that matter, even get a new home and sign a new contract without being able to take a physical? Like, what happened? I thought Todd Gurley would be available forever. Was he able to do a physical with Atlanta, or did they sign him sight unseen?
Well, they signed. Well, I mean, the deal that Gurley got in Atlanta was very much a prove it deal. And remember, I mean, the Rams were already paying a part of his freight because
good point, yeah.
Because there was guaranteed money in his contract, you know, and he had about $7.5 million left over from the Rams. So that one was a little easier because the financial risk wasn't as huge. You know, with someone like Cam, I think Clowney's in this category too. It's really difficult because it's one thing if a guy's been relatively healthy and, and teams are sharing, medical information and everything else now to try to help each other out. That's happening. It's one thing if it's a completely healthy guy where it's like, okay, like there's this or this or this to deal with. Like, for example, DeForest Buckner was traded from the Niners to the Colts. Well, he had a little bit of a sternum issue a couple of years ago. So the Niners were very helpful in sharing his medical files with the Colts to kind of expedite the trade. That sort of stuff's happening. It's something else when a guy has something that's been debilitating or could be a problem going forward. So, you know, if you look at like someone like Cam, it's the left foot, and foot injuries, specifically Liz Frank injuries, tend to linger. And he's got a right shoulder, and he's got a right shoulder problem. He's had multiple procedures on his right shoulder. And so, you know, for a quarterback, that's really tough. You know, so I think for those sorts of guys, for Clowney, for you know, Cam Newton, who've had significant injury history, Trent would fall into that group. Yeah, it is a lot more difficult right now because team doctors can't get their hands on guys from other teams.
Albert, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate the time, man, and stay safe out there, dude.
Anytime, guys. Have a good one. Stay safe.
See you, bud.
You got it. Albert Breer on Grant and Danny. He mentions Cam Newton there at the end of the discussion. He's one of three credentialed veteran quarterbacks who are available. If you had to take a flyer on one to have a strong second act in their career, Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, who would it be? You're listening to The Fan. Of the three veteran starting credible options at quarterback still available in the market, which do you think has the best chance to have a strong second act in whatever their new home ends up becoming as they hit the open market in the coming days now? Jameis Winston, who is leaving the Bucs in the rearview mirror after 5 years. Cam Newton, who's been with Carolina, playing only with the Panthers since 2011. Or Andy Dalton, whose entire career spanned his time in Cincinnati, dating back to that same debut season in 2011. That is the question for you at 800-636-1067. Danny, Newton is the oldest of these three quarterbacks at 30. Dalton is the oldest, I beg your pardon, at 32. I thought he was about 30. Newton at 30 is the second oldest of the group, and Jameis Winston is the only guy with his age at 26 with some upside. I can give you my rankings in a second, but I'm curious, first blush, you look at those three guys, you're a contender looking for a QB. Who do you take the flyer on?
Believe it or not, and this is kind of, you know, I saw the question. I'm sitting there, okay, let me do a little deep dive here. And who I came up with surprised me. So I'll give you that. It's Andy Dalton. And I know that people are going to recoil at that and they go, what are you talking about? Are you out of your damn mind? Here's why. Put him in a decent place, good offensive coordinator, decent weapons, you could have pretty good production. Nobody is saying this is a world beater. Nobody's saying this is a build around staple franchise quarterback, etc. But if he went to say, I'm not saying this wouldn't happen, obviously, but let's say he goes to LA with Sean McVay. You're telling me he couldn't throw for 3,800 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 10 picks? He could do that in that offense.
100%.
It's really, really good, right? I think Cam Newton is never going to be the same because of the injuries. That's not his fault. That's shoulder, that's foot, that's all these different procedures he's had. And Jameis Winston couldn't do it with Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians, if I'm a quarterback and I'm coming up in the world and I go, give me the five people I could go play for, Bruce Arians is on that list. That's the guy that I would love to go and thrive in his system. He'll lead the league in yards and touchdowns. The fact that they couldn't figure out a way to limit these horrendous turnovers of Jameis Winston, I don't think any coach wants to be in that business. If he couldn't do it with Arians, I don't think he can do it. And I think when he goes somewhere else and is asked to do more or has a more pedestrian system with the infinite weaponry than he had in Tampa Bay, I don't think you're going to see the production. So my answer, it surprised me, and I think it's Andy Dalton 1, Winston 2, and it's sad, but I think Cam Newton 3.
So Winston, for me, 88 interceptions in 5 seasons is just hard to unsee, an average of about 18 per year. But when you say he couldn't do it with Bruce Arians, he did it. I mean, he threw for 5,100 yards to lead the NFL, and he threw for 33 touchdowns. He had a dynamic and prolific year statistically. The problem, to your point, is that he threw 30 picks in 626 attempts, and that's just something you can't have. He also fumbled 12 times, by the way. You never really hear people mention that with Jameis. There are guys, for whatever reason, we talk about, oh, they have fumble problems. I mean, he's had a 15-fumble season before.
He's a fumble,
and last
dude.
Year, fumbled 12 times in addition to his 30 interceptions. Now, he only lost 5 of those, but that's just kind of a lucky thing that, you know, you don't or anybody else have has anything to do with how many of those get recovered. That having been said, so I look at the other two guys. Newton at 30 feels like he's 30 going on 40. If this was even a year ago, and I didn't know that he only played in 2 games and completed 50 passes last year and had injury problems again, I would definitely go with him. We forget, you know, people just comfortably sleep on how unbelievable Cam Newton was as a player from 2011 to 2018. And I say this all the time, he was not a great passer. In fact, as a quarterback, he was never all that accurate or precise, but he was an incredible football player. And as a QB, he was an unbelievable playmaker. 2015 was one of the coolest seasons I've ever seen, when he threw for 35 touchdowns and rushed for 10 more, went for 3,800 yards, and carried the Panthers with that good defense all the way to the Super Bowl before they got eviscerated in the championship game. But like you, I have major concerns about his health. I think he is damaged goods at this point, and I hope I'm wrong, because it would be great for all of us who are football fans to see him get back to being Cam Newton again. So then it's a two-horse race between Winston and Dalton. And here's how I kind of divvy this up. To me, Dalton is a really safe bet to be solid at his next stop. Like, to me, he would be the perfect fit for the New England Patriots. I've thought all along they were going to go get him. It's odd to me that they haven't, and maybe they won't. But I think in New England next year, he could throw, you know, 24 touchdowns, 11 or 12 interceptions in 16 games, put up close to 4,000 passing yards. You know, it's what he's done pretty much his entire career on OK Cincinnati teams. As recently as 2018, 21 touchdowns and 11 picks and a 90 rating. I mean, it's what he's been. There's just no real upside at all to him at 32 years old. He'll be 33 during the season, and there's no room for growth. Winston, I'm actually going to take the swing for the fences with. He's still only 26. Maybe you can get rid of some of those mistakes. At this point, I'm skeptical and not expecting it, but if somehow you could, you've seen where he can make some crazy throws and some big plays. So if you just need a guy that can be a caretaker, Dalton would be the better option. But of the three, if you're telling me one of these guys still ends up having a really strong few seasons at some point in their second act, I would actually go with Jameis Winston.
I get it. I mean, the courage that he has, I would say, to make whatever throw, you want that. You want to be able to back a guy off. It's just the fact that it hasn't happened, right? I love them coming out as a passer. The off-field stuff scared the hell out of me. It was just immaturity more than it is, you know, sort of criminal behavior. I know what's out there, but I just kind of went, you know, it's probably not somebody that I'd say I would invest in as my, you know,
that's a good point. I mean, I didn't really factor in the off-field stuff at all, to be completely honest with you.
And again,
I'm just saying, if you had to bet on one of these guys to play really good football, who is it? Winston, because of his age, coming off of 5,033,
and I get it.
I give him the best chance to.
Yeah, I mean, the turnover thing is just, it's hard to unsee a guy that was in the mid-30s in terms of turnovers and could have been sniffing 40 with his fumble rate and everything, the way he holds on to the football. But he's a guy that's going to let his receivers eat. If you've got a Mike Evans on your roster, not many teams do, but if you do, he'll throw it up to that guy. You're going to get plays made. He's going to throw the ball. He's going to turn it over, but you're also going to get some big totals on top of that. It's just I can't see a coach or GM going, sign me up for that for 16 weeks, just putting a team in a bad spot as he would consistently do, just kind of knowing the way coaches think about the game and their hatred of turnovers almost above all else. But I see your point. I mean, the upside, the ceiling, the good numbers are all up to the maximum. And I think to me, the thing that influences me is so are those bad numbers. But if you're looking, hey, what are these counting stats that work? It's like a guy that hits 500 homers but strikes out 7,000 times, in baseball right now, it's worth it. In football, is it? I don't know that paradigm will shift, but I see your point.
Yeah, I think that's all fair, for sure. And I should, I guess, point out, I don't think that we have to. It seems like common sense. But this isn't specific to any team. Like, I'm not saying for the Redskins. This is just, you're a GM, you need a quarterback. These are the three guys you're choosing between for the next few years. To me, Dalton is a safe bet to be very solid. Winston is not at all, but if you want to actually try to hit a home run instead of a single with Dalton, he's the only guy probably can hit the ball out of the park. And then your question with Cam Newton is just, do you think he can be healthy? Can he actually play? You're talking about two games last season and a pretty injury-ravaged 2018 where he didn't finish the year as a starter. Now, he played through all those injuries, but you go back and you watch the Panthers in 2018, and I just did by way of All or Nothing on Amazon Prime. I mean, he was really bad in a lot of games. Not as a player, because he was running all over the place, making plays, being a good leader, helping them out a lot, but he was just missing throw after throw after throw, and they finally had to sit him down for Taylor Heinicke, is how bad it got in 2018 as the Panthers collapsed and missed the playoffs. And that was kind of the last time we saw Cam Newton prior to the cameo last season. But who would you guys take a flyer on if you had to? That's the question. Three veteran quarterbacks available. We're not looking specifically for a team. I guess if we were trying to put a club on this, it would be someone like New England. Like, you need someone who can come in and help you win games and have a strong second portion of their career for the next few years. Jameis, Cam, or Andy Dalton? That's the question at 800-636-1067. Remember, at noon today, your Beltway Blitz at 12:45, another installment of our movie club. Last night we watched A Quiet Place. And at 1 o'clock today, Justin Kutcher, who calls Wizards games, stops by to call play-by-play of himself making his bed live on Grant and Danny right here on The Fan. A Wednesday, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Anthony on Twitter answering the question we've posed to you. Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, who would you roll the dice on if you were bringing in a quarterback and looking to get two or three real quality seasons out of somebody? We dismissed Cam just based on health. You know, if you could guarantee him getting back to being healthy, maybe he'd be the answer. So it was kind of Winston versus Dalton. You went Dalton. I think he has a much higher floor but a much lower ceiling than Winston, and I'm just kind of swinging for the fences here and going with Jameis. David said Cam is in a Chargers uniform, could produce MVP numbers again. Jameis in a backup role to either Big Ben in Pittsburgh or behind Rodgers in Green Bay. He needs to let the game slow down a little bit, and I think he'll be better because of it. He's been a full go since high school. Maybe. You know, I don't know at this point, sitting and watching at 26, how much better he gets by not being on the grass. I think he maybe is just who he is, and he takes a lot of risks. Anthony says Winston for sure. He is a gunslinger. I just saw a tweet, and it relates to what we're talking about, right during the break, from Andy Benoit, who we have on the show a lot, who studies the film. And he said the challenge for Jameis Winston is he needs to play in a much more dink-and-dunk type offense so that it regulates his risk-taking. But his drop-back and throwing styles are too methodical for some of those quicker throws. He's got the big wind-up, kind of Jason Campbell-y, where he brings the football from down at the belt all the way back around and makes the big C to throw it. You know, it's like he's a pitcher, and he actually was in college at Florida State, by the way, like getting ready to throw the football and using his whole body. And it just isn't all that conducive to those short, quick throws. But Benoit's point is if you could get him in an offense like that, it would help him because it would take away some of the risks that he takes down the field.
it's one of those catch-22s, right? The thing that would be best for him isn't necessarily what he does well. You know what I mean? Like, to me, this ranking isn't, for me, an endorsement of Dalton. I think Dalton is the ultimate Jag quarterback and has been for some time. But you put him in a nice situation, you'll get nice production. You put him in a bad situation, lo and behold, the production's bad, right? He's now become kind of a punchline. This is less an endorsement of him as it is, for me, kind of an indictment of the other guys for very different reasons. For Newton, it's the unfortunate nature of his career, which has been the injuries, which you just feel so bad for, because that ultimate playmaker was must-see television on Sundays, and that's kind of been taken away from him just through his playing style. And for me, I'm just much lower on Winston than I think you are. And I kind of look at the...
Pretty low on him.
Well, fair enough.
I don't want him starting for a team I care about.
But I go, what better situation to thrive? I'm not talking about thrive. I'm talking about, you know, MVP type stuff, right? Than a Bruce Arians offense with all those weapons, the best receiving tandem in the sport for my money. Then you go into the double tight ends these guys had. There was nothing but infinite wonderful options for that dude. You saw the passing totals. I attribute that mostly to the fact that they're behind because he turned the ball over three times in the first half. And, you know, he's kind of, you know, trying to bring them back, and would in some cases. Bruce Arians himself even said, you look at us last year, we were 7-9. It's not like that's any good, but you're close if you don't turn the ball over 20 times, directly referencing the 30 interceptions, rather, that Jameis Winston posted last year. If it was a reasonable total, that's a 10-plus win team with that offense. So to me, I just don't think he can do it. And yeah. if you do, then he'd be your number one in your rankings.
I am very surprised, by the way, just going back to your Dalton point, mm-hmm. that Andy Dalton has not gotten more traction as an available option, because I know that he throws some pick sixes and he makes mistakes, but if you just look at the numbers, I mean, he's been, I hate the word solid because what does it really mean? But that's what he's been. He's been fine. You can do a lot worse than him. Now, everybody wants to do better than him. That's unequivocal, and it goes right without saying. But you really can do a lot worse than Andy Dalton. And I keep pointing to New England. Andy Dalton is better than Brian Hoyer. He just is. I think he's better than Jarrett Stidham. I can't tell you that without any trepidation. And the reason why is because I don't know anything about Jarrett Stidham. I've seen him play for like 6 seconds. He threw a pick six. Maybe he's really good, and I just don't know it yet. But if I'm the Patriots and I'm trying to go 10-6 in a mediocre division and just get to the playoffs again this year, uh-huh. I think Dalton gives me a better chance to do that than the guys I have on my roster.
Yeah, me too. I mean, again, it all depends on what situation he walks into, right? If he goes to Miami, he'll put up terrible numbers, and he'll be awful, and everyone will laugh at him. If he goes to the Chargers, okay, maybe you actually – I'm not saying you have something there, but he could throw to Allen and Henry if he's healthy and dump it down to Eckler, and we'll go, you know what's having a nice renaissance is Andy Dalton. It's all about fit and situation for him. You know, when A.J. Green is healthy – he's better. When John Ross is a deep threat, he's better. When you take those guys away, he's not elevating, you know, Tyler Boyd and the rest of their Jag receiving core. He's a dependent player. Some guys are you can win because of. Some guys you can win with. He's a with guy at best, as evidenced by his 2012 through his 2015 seasons, where they're winning double-digit games four straight years with Andy Dalton at quarterback. And it's not as if he was putting up world-beating numbers. He was fine, and that team was pretty well built around him.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. I had mentioned a bracket I saw online to you the other day. Every company's now doing these brackets, just kind of fun content to get you through your day, essentially, give you some fodder while there's no games to be breaking down. And I saw this on For the Win. It's the same company that did the stand-up comedy bracket that was right up your alley. Mm-hmm. This one is up your alley, but is kind of what I live for, which is a broadcaster bracket. So they've got four wings here. They've got play-by-play, color commentary, sideline, and then pundits. Now, the pundits one, you know, the people that are just loud on television and annoy me a whole lot, I don't care a lot about that one. They've got the final two coming out of an eight-person bracket to get to the final four to represent the pundit category is now Bomani Jones and Dan Le Batard. Those two guys are battling as the 5 and the 7 seeds, and one of them will make the final four. As far as the other three, which I do care a lot more about, your play-by-play, your color, and your sideline guys and ladies. So my guy, Ian Eagle, was the 8 seed and got beat by Jim Nance in the 1 versus the 8 matchup. I would have had Eagle beat Nance, but I know that that's something that a lot of people aren't going to do. It's a little bit of a hipster pick. Everybody loves Jim Nance. He advances to take on Al Michaels. Michaels beat Nance. So Michaels versus Doc Emrick, and Doc Emrick beat Gus Johnson, is the last two standing to come out of the play-by-play wing. Al Michaels, Doc Emrick of NBC on hockey.
So this is, if you're looking for who's a better, that's tough. Because right now, I don't think anybody does anything better than Doc Emrick calls hockey. Right? But he's special.
3 years ago, I definitely would have agreed with you. And I hate to say anything negative about Doc Emrick because he's just a national treasure and I love everything about the guy. We're starting to get into lose the fastball territory a little bit with him. Still the best. I think he's still the best on hockey on a national level. I'd rather watch him than anybody else. But when you're saying nobody calls anything better than he calls hockey, I'm not going to give him that anymore, and I would have a couple years ago.
Well, here's my point. I don't know that anybody – I mean, maybe Breen in basketball at this stage because he's awesome. Kevin Harlan doing – I mean,
he got beat, by the way, by Gus Johnson in the first round. Harlan got beat by Al Michaels.
Yeah, so – but Michaels, obviously, the – gold standard at this point for play-by-play. If you've got anything right now, let Al Michaels just sort of casually tell you what's going on in a way that's succinct, concise. The voice, everything about Al Michaels is excellent. He's the guy that's sort of, you know, he's an 8 in every attribute, 8 or 9 out of 10 in every attribute all the way across the board. I don't want Doc Emrick doing baseball, but Doc Emrick doing hockey, I still think he'd be the one seed over anybody else doing anything, right? So to me, it would be that's what makes it so tough. I think Michaels is the better broadcaster because, again, he right now he's doing Sunday Night Football. Well, not right now, but you know what I mean. But he can do anything. I mean, I want him calling my Olympic moment. I want him calling my World Series game or whatever.
Of those two, yeah. I'm going Doc Emrick over Al Michaels. But my bracket would have looked a little different. Color commentary, so you got Tony Romo beating Troy Aikman to get to the Elite Eight. Ooh. And Chris Collinsworth just topped Doris Burke. And I love Doris Burke.
It should be
Jeff Van Gundy in a 2-7 matchup. So it's now Collinsworth versus Romo. Give me Tony Romo there. I think both are really good, though. But I'll take Romo.
I don't love either, as you know, but in that matchup, I'll take Collinsworth.
But I just live for these types of brackets.
I know. I love ranking stuff.
Right up my alley, man, when you start talking about broadcasters and you put them in any form when you can debate them. It's a good time. The double play is next. We're an hour away from the Grant and Danny Movie Club as well. Next hour on G&D. What do we think the plan is for the Redskins now that we're seeing it materialize? What do you think Ron Rivera and his staff decided on and thought they were going to accomplish going into free agency? And now that we're seeing what they've done, let's kind of work back from what their plan was and how you feel about what they've accomplished. We'll do that at 12:18 on G&D today right here on The Fan. Hey, guys. Grant Paulson from my friends at Lindsay Chevy. They're giving you some amazing deals right now. Up to $7,000 off Malibu, Camaro, and Blazer. $10,000 off Equinox and Traverse. And because it's truck month, heavy and light duty Silverados up to $15,000 off MSRP. They got 1,000 vehicles to choose from. And my buddy Paul Smith, the same guy that I went to when I wanted my Chevy Equinox for the wife, the Chevy Cruze for myself, is going to get you in a ride. And he is not going to be undersold on any of the cars on his lot. 0% financing across the lot, up to 130% of KBB for your trade. Now's the time. Lindsay Chevy's the place. Make sure you don't miss out. I love it at Lindsay, and you will too. They're going to put a smile on your face during some tough times right now. Check them out at lindsaychevy.com, or better yet, cruise over to Lindsay Chevrolet in Woodbridge and tell my guy, the general manager, Paul Smith, Grant Paulson sent you. It is 11:45, which means in just a moment we'll get to our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny, and you're locked in to The Fan. Chad Dukes versus the world at 2. The shows roll on as we keep you company and abreast of everything going on in sports and hopefully entertain and take your mind off of some of the craziness going on in the world. Quick shout out and thank you. My brother-in-law came by over to drop a couple things off at the house yesterday. And I got to say, you know, he's been working on, I hate to use the term the front lines, but he's bagging and working at Safeway and has been at work a whole bunch here lately. And in just hearing some of the things from texts and phone calls with him over the last few days that are going on at the store, you got to say thanks to those people, man. The couple of times I've gone to the grocery store, they're taking all the precautions they can and wearing the gloves, and they now got tape on the ground, and they're trying to keep customers from getting crowding around the registers, and they're cleaning their belt every X amount of minutes. I mean, it can't be a fun time to have that job right now. I'll say that.
No,
but those people keep showing up, and they keep going to work, and to the nurses and the doctors. I saw a picture online yesterday, you know, of the bruising and legitimate, like, skin being broken and some blood on how they're wearing their goggles and all their tight equipment around their face now. There are people that have to leave their homes and go do their jobs, and they're actually putting their health on the line, and we got to say thank you to all of them.
Without question. So, and everybody, rightfully so, by the way, is thanking nurses, doctors, everybody in that world, and that's 100% correct, on the front lines. I've got a friend who's an ER doc in Fairfax and another who's dealing with patients, and he's got one right now that's, you know, in critical condition with the virus, et cetera. I mean, the whole deal, 100% right. I love that you just said what you said, because you have to add in the folks that, where it's not glamorous, and I hate to say that right now medicine is glamorous, but that's the popular one to thank at this point. Nobody's thanking the garbage men. Nobody's thanking the people that are at spots where, it's sort of out of the public eye, et cetera, but you still have to go into work, and you still have
Absolutely.
To deal with people, you know, whether it's folks at the grocery store or everything else. So,
or how about, you know, restaurants where they're still doing takeout or carryout?
Absolutely.
You know, Chipotle, I saw the other day, had a big sign when I drove past saying, you know, they're still basically making food to send out the door. I know Kava, just getting on my Kava app the other day, is still doing pickup. You know, you can't go do anything in the store, but you can come in and pay and leave. And the people that are making those meals and getting people through and getting people
Absolutely.
By, all those folks, man, you really have to just say thanks and tip your cap, because it is a strange time. And the little bit of normalcy we're getting, you know, for you guys on the air as an example, Brendan and Tom in studio, for, you know, someone who just wants to taste some food they didn't make for the first time in 4 days, so they're calling takeout. And it is something where you want to find those small businesses, and you want to take good care of some of the people in your area or some of the chains or what have you, because it's a brutal time for everyone. I was wondering yesterday, and I won't say the company, but we got an email from a facility that we use a lot basically saying they're not going to be open for several weeks. And it hits me over and over and over again, but I was like, how is this place going to be okay 6-7 weeks from now if they're not making any money between now and then? And we're all going through the same things, and in our own lives, we're all dealing with different signs of this. So it's tough, but thanks to those people that are doing that. It is time for our double play. Not really a good transition here from being thoughtful and discussing the heroes in society to this, but here we go, Danny. Have you heard about Boober Eats?
Excuse me?
Boober Eats. Have you heard about this?
Are you mispronouncing something, or are you actually saying the word?
I am saying the word correctly.
Then the answer is no, I have not heard of that.
All right. There is a collection of strippers in Portland, Oregon, who are delivering takeout food to people who are out of work, and so they have a new app, a new ability to bring you food called Boober Eats. It's a wacky bit.
It is. Again, necessity is the mother of invention.
This could last forever, for all I know, and maybe the rules could change down the road when you're allowed to actually, like, enter people's homes or something. I don't know. But this is from the New York Post. Dancers arrive escorted by a very formidable bodyguard to ensure their safety foremost, and also be sure that potentially COVID-19-infected customers don't try to get handsy with the women. They are outfitted. The company is outfitting these women with face masks, disposable gloves, and sanitizing. They're not wearing a whole lot else, I will tell you. Like hairstylists or tattoo artists, strippers are generally considered independent contractors rather than employees, meaning they have to rent their space on the pole. For the same reason, they also aren't eligible for unemployment benefits. So what have they done? They've gotten creative, and they have launched Boober Eats.
You got to do it. Again,
they bring you your food.
Amen.
The video I saw that is accompanied with this story is basically they drive up. Okay, they're in this car with their bodyguard. The bodyguard, I think, in the video I saw, it seemed like stayed in the car or stayed back. But the two women kind of go up to the porch with the food in the bag. Looks like a, you know, your typical, like, brown bag you get from Uber, like Thami would get if we're at the studio. and the two girls walk up. They put the bag down, and you interact for a few seconds. Nobody touches anyone, and they go on their way. And for some reason, people are wanting to do that.
And when you say interact, what is it? Just a, like, how's it going? Good. How are you? Or is it more, here's a boombox and some music,
so
and a little bit of dance?
The video I saw, there was not a boombox or music. There was some shaking. How about that? There was a little bit of like, hey, thanks so much for using this service, and this is me.
Here are two things that I have. Yeah, I see.
Right.
I see what you're talking about. Maybe this sticks around. But I imagine, I just think about myself, right? We're in a nice little neighborhood. Everybody's a parent. Everybody's got kids. And there's a lot of folks around. And if I ordered that service, imagine them just kind of walking up to my front porch and laying the package down and doing what they would do. I wonder what kind of stir that would cause among the neighborhood faithful.
Very, very odd. Exactly. Like, I'm in a townhouse. I have neighbors.
Yep,
like,
exactly.
Just the idea. It's just such a good point. Like, Grant got Boober Eats again.
Just imagine. It's very weird. Well, because all the kids are at home. Like, Mom, Dad, what's going on?
Well, the thing I saw, it was like a woman and her dog. And, like, the woman came out with her dog on the porch to, like, get the food.
Oh.
And, like, I think one of the things in the story was, like, I just wanted to support them and give them a fighting chance or whatever.
Oh, that's nice.
That is very nice.
But I also wanted to see a little dance.
But I guess she was fine with everything else that happened as part of Boober Eats. But it's in Portland. I don't think it's all over the joint just yet.
Not a national chain yet, but give a ton.
Don't you think that could last? There are going to be things that start with this pandemic that do withstand the test of time. You agree?
Yeah, the smart inventions. I think so, yeah.
He's Danny and I'm Grant. The back nine of the show kicks off with the Blitz at noon next right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.